time of worship on a first Sunday is very special to me. So I thank you. Pardon me, I've got a few things I want to pull from today. I want to share some scripture with you. And those of you using my iPad, it's been a new thing in my world. My wife would probably tell you that it's consumed me a little bit more, but these things are great, aren't they? I used to be a guy, and you'll get to know me as we go here, but I used to be that guy that was, I had to have a pen and paper with me everywhere. No problem, yeah, but I need a couple of these. Perfect. But, and I'm still a little bit like that, but I'm starting to use the technology a little bit more, so very thankful for it. It's certainly a gift. Pastor Dave told me about kind of what you do on first Sundays, and he wanted me to share with you about who Jesus is, you know, sort of in my world. And we're going to talk today a little bit about what that looks like in my world. I'm so fired up right now after watching the basketball highlights. I could probably spend the next hour to tell you exactly where I was during every one of those shots. I think I can chronologically remember exactly where I was, especially the Jordan highlights. You know, if you grew up my age, you know, and again, I remind our kids, like, come to our basketball camps and stuff like that. I feel like it's necessary for me to remind them who Michael Jordan was. Because now it's been a little time since he retired and quit playing. And, of course, everything's LeBron, and, you know, everybody gets the hype these days. But so I remind him of those little things. But I tell him all the time, one of the shots that's not in there is the shot that Michael Jordan took. It was actually the last jump shot he took as a Chicago Bull. He did that little thing where he left the game for, like, the second or third time, and then he came back and played. You know, did the baseball thing, played with the Bulls, then he quit again, and then came back and tried to play a little bit with the team in Washington, D.C., but we don't count that. Okay? But the last shot he took as a Chicago Bull won them a sixth championship. And I still tell our little campers in all our camps, it's the greatest shot he ever took. Even though the one in there against the Lakers where he goes up through the lane, he goes up like this, dips it down. You notice he didn't need to do that? I mean, if you look at the film over and over again, he could have just gone up and dunked it or laid it in. But he goes up here and had the flair for the dramatic. So he thought he'd bring it back over here. So I can't tell you how many times in my driveway I shot that shot. Why not? I mean, and I think most kids at that age, you know, wanted to recreate that and sort of have that special feeling. And you never miss, of course, when you're in your driveway. Now, if you put defense on the floor and things like that, it becomes a little tougher. But getting back to that, the shot that not so many people know about, it gets back to, you know, some of the reasons why I coach and teach is the last shot he took was for a championship. But what he did, he hit about an 18-foot jump shot. He did push off a little bit to get open, but he made this jump shot, and he ran backwards on the court. He wasn't showboating, but he just was into the moment. He made the shot. The team won the game. The buzzer goes off, but he held his follow-through just perfect. And so I try to remind kids, watch that shot. I mean, the dunks are great and all this stuff. But a little kid learning how to play the game, I mean, the last shot the greatest player in the world ever took was perfect as we can be anyway. All right, and you follow through and all that stuff. Anyway, that was not planned, just a side note. I love the film. I'm glad you did that. Reminded me that it's an exciting time, and I'm blessed to be doing what I'm doing. I want to talk to you today a little bit about who is Jesus, and specifically in my world, and throughout what I'm going to talk about, I think you'll get to know me a little bit, and a little bit of my testimony, and kind of what I've been through. The scripture I want to share with you actually comes out of Matthew chapter 13. If you have Bibles, please open them up. Matthew chapter 13. And it's Jesus telling the parable of the four soils. And some of you may be familiar with it, but, you know, parables at the time of Jesus were just obviously just stories that he shared with large groups for a few reasons. It were ways that those that were close to him, those that had accepted him as their Savior, those that were following him, could understand a common story, something that might be familiar with them, but it would explain spiritual themes in such a way. It was also a way that Jesus could practice his faith, he could practice his ministry, and those that were not in the same belief with him wouldn't really catch on, and he wouldn't get in trouble. I mean, it was a way for him really to preach to masses of people through stories, and those that were in tune to him, they would understand. And so we'll look at that a little bit here in just one second. So the parable of the four soils, I'm just starting in right at the start of Matthew chapter 13. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat in it, while all the people stood on the shore. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, "A farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate up the seeds. Some fell on rocky places, where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly, but because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered, because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop, 160 or 30 times what was sown. He who has ears, let him hear." So that's the short parable of the four soils. And when I put that into, when I speak as a coach, and again, I have the privilege of really mentoring and teaching young men, people that come in through our program. I have assistant coaches as well. I feel like it's a responsibility for me to be a mentor to them as well. But we have, varying ages. A lot of them are the same age. In fact, you've met some. I know you've met James Oyamo. He's one of our elder players. He's graduated. Actually, he graduated a year ago. He's now a master's student in our MBA program. And he'll be around one more year, so we got one more year with him. Not as a player, but he'll be helping out as a coach, and he'll be a great mentor to a lot of our young men too. But speaking as a coach, and when I have this parable in mind, the story should really encourage teachers, coaches, leaders, pastors. It should really be of encouragement. Okay? Coaches, for the most part, we try to sow really good seeds. And in this case, who's the ultimate coach? That's Jesus, right? I mean, that's why we read the Word. There's so many good things that he's teaching and coaching us through his Word. And he's got great seeds. Any seeds that he drops, there's nothing wrong with the seeds. Okay? It just happens to be where they drop. Not all the seeds will sprout. Even some plants that do grow are going to vary. And I see that all the time with my team. It's not to tout myself and say I'm the greatest coach of all time. That I'm far from that. Far from that. But there are times, particularly this season, where some of the sprouts didn't grow very well. And that, in a way, is somewhat of how society views our success. We didn't win very many games. I'm going to be very honest with you. I go to an annual coaches convention. It's held in conjunction with the Final Four, the NCAA tournament. You know, millions of dollars and all these games that are played. And a lot of times you meet coaches throughout the nation, sometimes all over the world, that you know and you run into. And what's the first thing everyone says? Because no one can remember anybody's name. "Hey, coach. Hey, coach." Well, there's 5,000 coaches, so you can't go wrong. "Hey, coach, how's it going? How's your year? How was your season?" Because we don't know what else to say. But we want to be nice, right? And I heard an interesting thing. Someone told me, you know what? Why wouldn't, everyone says, well, we had a tough year. We had some injuries, blah, 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 making excuses. why don't coaches just tell the truth? And so I decided this year, we had a tough year. We had a miserable year. Probably had a really good year in some other ways outside of what society thinks is a successful year. Because we had some lessons learned this year. But we had a miserable year in terms of wins and losses and goals that we had set. And so every coach that asked me how the year went, I said, it was terrible. It was brutal. Oh, you get some guys hurt. Well, you know what happened? Not really. We had a few bumps and bruises, a couple sprained ankles, things like that. And we did have some injuries, but the honest truth is it didn't work. It just didn't work this year. The seeds that we spread and planted and those kind of things just didn't quite take. Some grew. In fact, when you have time to look back on it, some really prospered, but not in the ways that society would tell us, oh man, what a great program, what success you had this year. Conference champions, you know, national tournaments, all that kind of stuff. Records broken. And we didn't quite have all that. Okay, I'll get to that in a little bit. As a coach, though, you can get discouraged, though, when you set the goals, these kind of things happen or they don't happen. But I think this parable tells us that we don't have to be discouraged. No matter what, we don't have to be discouraged. You don't always see results, you know, right after you throw the seeds down. You have to give it time, and most importantly, you have to have faith. You know, a little while ago, back in the month of May, it was actually right around, it was a little surprise. I went back to the state of Iowa. Anybody been to Iowa? Yeah, I know. Used to live there. So this is a little bit of a parable that I'm, you know, an illustration that I'm sharing with you, although it might not be that common or familiar with you. But I went back to the state of Iowa to surprise my mother, who had a couple of things going. It happened to be Mother's Day weekend, which was terrific. But also, the following Monday, she was having a retirement party after 41 years of teaching kindergarten and first grade. I mean, she put her time in, 41 years of molding the youth. And so she retired at the end of the school year. Anyway, I won't go into too many details, but my two younger sisters and I were able to travel there, and we surprised her. I mean, the tears were flowing. It was crazy. It was fun. It was great. And we were able to spend then Mother's Day with her, and then the next day go to a retirement party. And I remember this. Here's what I wanted to get to, is that on Monday, I was traveling over to this retirement party. It's in rural Iowa, okay? It's surrounded by nothing that we see here. It's surrounded by rows and rows of cornfields, soybean fields, things like that. And granted, in May, it's like spring planting season. And so I'm driving in a car with my dad. Now, real quick snapshot of my dad. He's me, pretty much me, same exactly everything, just, you know, 20 or 30 years older. And, you know, into sports, all that kind of stuff. But he, for the last 30 years, has sold, or he's been in the farm machinery business. He sells million-dollar combines and tractors. Again, this might be a world that you know nothing about. But I think you start to paint the picture. So he's into the farm industry. So I come from the East Coast, right? We're in Iowa. He's got this big fancy car. I'm thinking we'll just zip right over there, right? Fast pace like we are out here. He's driving about 50 miles an hour, which this is a wide open highway. You know, we could be going 75 or 80, even right along. But he's driving nice and slow, and I'm just thinking, wow. I mean, days are long here. But I start to, you know, we're talking a little bit, and I start to look out the window, and I start to think back about, you know, this is the culture I grew up in, farming and ranching in the Midwest. And I'm watching all these, you know, I'm watching cornfield, bean field, and I'm just looking at those fields, and I'm noticing things that look different. They just look a little different. And I know this stuff, but I have to ask him. I go, you know, Dad, why are they? They're obviously doing something different. They're planting something a different way there than this next field. And he starts to refresh me. Oh, well, they're doing, you know, till versus no-till, and this, blah, 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 blah. All right? Over my, you know, I kind of get it. But it starts to make sense to me again. until, you know, a couple weeks after the trip, I start to formulate some of these things, and I'm doing some Bible study and things like that. But it comes back to this parable and some other things that those farmers have great faith, but they're also very skilled. I mean, they know the correct way in which to put that seed into the ground. The thing that, the way that will work for them, will work for the particular place they live, all those kind of things. So they're very educated, and they understand the correct way to plant that seed. But here's the bigger point. The faith of a farmer is very important. They're educated, they know exactly how to put that seed in the ground, but after that thing's in the ground, what are they going to do? There's things they can do, but what if they're praying for the right amount of rain, the right amount of sunshine? It becomes a faith journey at that point. They've done all the research. Believe me, they have all the fancy equipment they can, with GPSs and things like that. They don't even have to drive tractors anymore. But it becomes a faith story after that. And so it really hit me as I was traveling through Iowa corn and bean fields that the faith of a farmer is very important. And it related to me in a way that I asked myself, how do we grow our faith? Well, in Romans 10:17, just a quick passage. Romans 10:17 says, consequently, faith comes from hearing the message, and the message is heard through the word of Christ. It's very simple to me. That book you're holding right now, the word, is how we grow our faith. It's how we plant that seed. And the illustration of the Iowa corn and bean fields, at least for me, again, it's something that's not common to everybody, but I think we can see the illustration, see that picture, that the seed is most productive when it is put into an environment that gives it the best chance to germinate and grow. It's no different than you and I if we want to grow a plant in our office or at home. If we don't put that in the right environment, we're going to have trouble. I've been given plants throughout my coaching career that have gone in my office, and I might forget about them for 2 or 3 months, and then I happen to look over at it, and whoops, I didn't give that thing a very good environment, did I? I didn't give it the sunlight or water it or whatever, and so I neglected that. Our faith is very similar. In fact, it's just exactly like that. When a farmer, though, this will be my last, I'll wrap up the farm stories, but when a farmer uses his knowledge and expertise and puts that seed into the right environment, then it can succeed. Not only does it provide for that farmer in central Iowa, but that those seeds, those huge fields of corn and soybeans and all those kind of things provide for millions of people, not just that farm family. They might take their crop, take it to the market. It might provide a nice wage. It might provide food for that family, but then shipped out to the rest of the world. It provides for thousands. So can our faith. So can our faith. And I try to do that. I try to use that in my coaching life as well. I mean, look around you right now. You are in that environment. You are in that. I mean, we are all seeds that God has sprinkled across the earth. And depending on where we land, can make a huge difference in how we cultivate and how we germinate, right? I mean, we all have personal stories. We all have personal stories about, it happens at different times, different places. It could happen at Rutgers University, for all we know. But having yourself right here, surrounded by the Word, surrounded by people, is the proper place, it's the right place for you to germinate and grow. Now, back to the parable. In Matthew 13, we read the parable of the four soils, but in verses 10 through 23, Jesus then explains the parable. And I want to take you through that again and just show you how my life is sort of weaved in and out of that parable. Starting with verse 10, the disciples came to him and asked, "Why do you speak to the people in parables?" He replied, again, he's talking to his disciples right now. He replied, "The knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, So they were like a privileged group, but not to the rest, not to them. Whoever has will be given more, and he will have in abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. This is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah. You will be ever hearing, but never understanding. You will be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For this people's heart has become closed. They hardly hear with their ears. They have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, I would heal them. And this is where it gets very good. But blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. For I tell you the truth, many prophets and righteous men longed to see what you see, but did not see it, and to hear what you hear, but did not hear it. Listen then to what the parable of our sower means. When anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in his heart. This is the seed that was sown along the path. The one who received the seed that fell on rocky places is the man who hears the word and at once receives it with joy. But since he has no root, he lasts only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, he quickly falls away. The one who received the seed that fell among the thorns is the man who hears the word. But the worries of his life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke it, making it unfruitful. But the one who received the seed that fell on good soil is the man who hears the word and understands it. He produces a crop yielding 160 or 30 times what was sown. So Jesus in those passages goes back and explains further just what this parable really means. Well, I'll close with, here's what it means in my life. And I hope, and we have such a great age range here, I feel like this might hit each of you as I sort of walk through it. It's a little bit of my testimony as we go. But I think about, starting with how this parable relates to me in verse 19, going back there. When anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in his heart. This is the seed that was sown along the path. And I can just see, Jesus throwing down those nuggets of knowledge and opportunities. But again, some of them fall not in the soil, they fall on the stone. And the birds come up and pick them up. Now, that brought me back to my youth days. When, as a child growing up in the church, and faith and church was very much a religion to me at that point. It was, you go to church on Sunday. It was very important in our family. There's no question about that. And I have a fond, remembrance of my church life, but it lacked personal relationship with Jesus. But yet, every Sunday we were in church, and good community members and members of the church and those kind of things. But in my young adult, it felt like I had those seeds, but it was very much just religious to me and not, something that was more in tune with my heart. So there wasn't a real connection between Jesus and my heart, but there was a religious connection. So I was missing those seeds that were being dropped. In verse 20 through 21, the one who received the seed that fell on rocky places is the man who hears the word and at once receives it with joy. But since he has no root, he lasts only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, he quickly falls away. Wow, this explains me as a young adult going into my college years. And it might hit some of you as well. Even my early years into marriage to this wonderful woman right here. I was more concerned at that time You know, we're talking about middle school, high school, college, more concerned with basketball, baseball, a little bit of golf here and there. I mean, those things were really probably more the center of my life than anything. And eventually, in my young, you know, after college, probably more consumed with my job. Those things really became centers in my life. You know, what I didn't know at the time, and I know my wife can say this and echo this, is that, you know, in my early 20s, I was very fortunate. I graduated from college. And unlike today, in a very tough economy, I got a job right away. I hadn't even turned 22 years old yet. I had a job. I was teaching full-time and able to coach my own team, a head coach, at the age of 21. I had no idea how fortunate I was. Walked into a situation, it was a high school that just had tradition like no other tradition in the world, in the part of the world we lived in. I couldn't believe what was going on. And so it was natural for me, without, you know, having a religious base, but not having a root, a center around something else than coaching and basketball. You know, I thought I was a good person. I think I was an okay guy. I tried to treat my wife with respect and those kind of things. But later would I find out, I mean, that's not what she needed or what I really needed. But man, what a way to start out your career. I mean, I got to jump right in and I'm doing exactly what I want to do. You know, a couple of years went by, I thought, you know, I want to coach at the college level. So I went and got a position with my old college coach. And again, probably even more so, was consumed so much with wanting to do well, but also wanting to please a mentor of yours, that I consumed myself with that job. I mean, I was all about coaching. I was all about making myself better. I was all about recruiting, bringing in the next group of talent. And I probably spent 14, 15, maybe more hours a day, either in the office, on the court, on the road. You know, we didn't have children at the time, so it was pretty easy for me to slide home, lay down in our bed, you know, a few words with my wife, out the next morning. Because we had to build a team, we had to get better. And I was just in a little assistant coach, making no money. But I was consumed by it. Can you see that visualization? It doesn't have to be coaching, it could be anything, but, you know, the seeds fall. A little bit of dirt grabs it, and there's some life there, because I was all about motivation and speaking life into my players and things like that, but I didn't have a center around Christ to really flourish. Moving on into verse 22, the next phase. The one who received the seed that fell among the thorns is the man who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke it, making it unfruitful. Well, I've never made a lot of money in my life, so I don't know if the wealth necessarily got me. But some of those things I just talked about were consuming me. Now, this is my late 20s and early 30s. And I, at this time, though, I had a little bit there. You know, the seed fell in the dirt and things were growing in my life. I had a wonderfully godly woman in my life. And her influence on me, Jackie at the time had just developed a ministry on her own. Stopped teaching, stopped working to devote all her time to developing this ministry. And I was like, this was great. I'm doing everything I want to do. And I've got this godly woman sort of leading me in a good way. This is really a good phase in my life. And I was pulling energy and faith and spirituality from her. And that was really good. Although it wasn't what God intended. I love your verse in Jeremiah. Because he had plans. But I'm a little hard-headed. But these weeds and thorns in my life stopped me from owning my own faith. I was growing in faith, but through my wife, which is not a bad thing. Don't tell me. I'm not telling you that's a bad thing, because spouses have a special relationship. But I did not own my own relationship with Christ. It was really all through her. And my analogy that I usually use, you know, part of my testimony is that we were traveling one day two young kids in our backseat, video player going. We were actually coming back from Easter vacation in Texas, driving back to Iowa, a long drive. And we're in the middle of Kansas. Anybody that's been to Kansas will know what I'm talking about. Yes.
I'm from Kansas City.
Oh, wow. We were southwest of Kansas City on one of the interstates, and there is nothing. I mean, I'm from South Dakota where there's nothing. But Kansas is just like grass and wheat fields, and here we have an exit every couple of miles. And if you're on a Kansas freeway, you're on there, you better have a tank of gas and imagination, because there's no stop. You can stop. It's just a road. It's just the side of a road. You're not getting off at the convenience store. There's not going to be a mall. There's not going to be anything. So we're driving, and it's long. And my wife, in all her wisdom, and she is, I won't call her conniving, but she had a great time. We had just heard a sermon, you know, and again, this is a good point right here. We had just heard a sermon on Easter Sunday talk about, the pastor talked about, everyone has a testimony. Everyone has a testimony. Whether you think it's some earth-shattering thing, or everyone has a story. And sure enough, kids in the back watching videos, in and out of sleep. My wife has me captivated. She has me captured in that car. There's nowhere I can go. She says, "Well, Ted, what'd you think of the pastor?" Oh, man, it was a great, good message. I took notes. All right, pen and paper, right? I took notes that day. Oh, it was really good. It touched me. I'm in that whole phase of, I really am growing in my faith, starting to, God's, pulling at me. She said, "Well, what's your testimony?" I can't pull over. I'm like, if we were 20 minutes from home, I could stall long enough to, I got things to do. Got to get to the office, got to recruit. But I couldn't. She had me. I love her for that. In fact, I really love her for that, because it was the start of a big change in my life. But anyway, I said, after stumbling for a little bit, I said, "I don't think I have one. I mean, I just, and I told her, she knew this, but I told her what I told you. I grew up in a church-going family, did the whole thing, very culturally religious, that kind of thing. But I don't have any relationship with Christ. None that was my own. I just said, I feel like I'm growing in faith." And then I told her this, and I'll change the analogy just a little bit, but I told her that, I'm growing through her strength. And, that isn't quite the deal. She was asking me to be more of a leader in our home, which is very important, especially for young men. And, I told her, I said, it's like you're the coach in our family for faith and spirituality. And I said, it's kind of like telling Coach K, which means a lot to me, how to coach. In other words, it's saying, "Hey, LeBron James, I'm supposed to take the last shot now. I'm supposed to be the guy. I'm just the guy, coming off the bench." To me, she was the LeBron James. The ball's in your hands. I'm going to follow you. If I have to use basketball analogies. So it was intimidating for me in a way to be, here's someone with an established ministry, singing, writing books, speaking to large groups, and now I'm supposed to step up, even as a man, step up and lead our family. But that's what she needed. And little did I know that for like 10 or 12 years of our marriage, she was, at first she was, we need to be going to this church or doing this, But then after that stopped. And at the time I thought, "Oh, we're okay. I'm out of the blue here. I'm okay." But what I didn't know is that she was on her knees praying every day, every night, that I would just step up and be the man to lead our family. And so it started to come to a head about then. 2 weeks later, God really started tugging on me. He brought a man into my life who to this day is one of my dearest friends. He's a pastor down in the D.C. area. But 2 weeks after we had that conversation in the car, against my wishes, he was there, and it came through the game of basketball. I mean, God meets us where we're at, doesn't he? and he came through the game of basketball. And I'll finish that story after I read verse 23. But the one who received the seed that fell on good soil is the man who hears the word and understands it. He produces a crop yielding 160 or 30 times what he has sown. So just to wrap that story up, 2 weeks after that conversation, I meet a guy who I kind of knew, but I invited him to speak to our basketball team and to some other athletes on campus, do a little leadership thing. He has a great event, blah, blah, blah. I won't bear the details there, but I'm driving him back to the airport, and we stopped at a stop sign. This is in a small town in Iowa. I'm driving about an hour and a half to take him back to the airport, and he says, Ted, you know, it's been great getting to know you today. You know, it's really been nice. Yeah, same thing, you know. I have no idea why I was able to clear my schedule. This is a guy, he's the chaplain for the Washington Redskins, and he's running a church. He's got all kinds of things going. He says, I have no idea why, you know, I cleared my schedule for this, but I understand why now. And he asked me, Ted, where are you at in your faith? Again, I told him all this whole story. Hey, I'm growing in faith. You know, my wife's a good example, all those kind of things. I really feel like I'm moving in the right direction. He said, no. Ted, I think I'm here today as a answer to your wife's prayers. And it absolutely stopped my world. Ironically, we were at a stop sign. The little minivan I was driving, I put that thing in park. And I couldn't speak because I had never mentioned one word to this guy about what Jackie and I had shared so intimately. You know, and how she told me I've been praying for 10 or 12 years and all this kind of stuff. He sat there and spoke prophecy over me that day and said, Ted, I had no idea coming up here what I was doing. And the event was great and we had a great time and all that, but Ted, I'm here as a result of your wife praying for years and years and years that you, and this is what sent shivers all through my body, that you will step up and be the leader of the faith in your household. As you can imagine, we drove, after I composed myself a little bit, we drove an hour and a half to the airport. I don't remember anything about the drive other than talking about faith. Him giving me an outline of what it looks like to be a man that leads faith in your household. I don't remember the signs. I don't remember the exits. We got to the airport hotel somehow, and then we parked and we prayed a prayer that many of you probably prayed. And that day, I had always known Christ as my Savior, but at that moment, that was 4 years ago, Christ became the Lord over my life. Not just my Savior, but now He dictates everything I do. And so now, finally, that's why I love this parable so much. And God kind of pulled my heart to this parable, is that now, finally, how joyous it's been in my heart and in my life that I have soil. That when He sprinkles seeds down in my life, I have a place that's a proper environment. And now I can spread this kind of joy to the players I coach, to the people I visit with, and most importantly to these three over here. So to wrap it all up, you know, through all these phases in my life, where was Jesus? He was there all the time. He just, you know, His timing's perfect, isn't it?
Amen.
Absolutely perfect. And I could have come to Christ or closer to Christ much earlier, but I did when He wanted me to. And He met me through basketball. Go figure. Who is Jesus? He was devout parents that made church an important priority in my young life, even though I didn't have a great personal relationship with Christ, but they made it very important. He kept me safe as a young adult. He spared my life in a few tragic car accidents. He gave me a companion that's a godly woman. That's who Jesus is. He was a steady presence that patiently waited as He called me time after time. He patiently waited. And now, He's the joy in my life. He's absolute joy in my life. He's the center of all decisions I make. He's the first conversation I have in the morning. Now, I'm not always perfect, but I try to do that every morning. Pray, read the Bible. He is love notes from my daughter that that I get. You know, sometimes when I wake up, I go down and I see, oh, this is my dad. He's very happy all the time. To dad from Jenna. My iPad, who, you know, I do use the iPad a lot, but those two use it just about as much as I do, so I have to steal it away from them. But, you know, I'll open up my notebook in here, and it's got, you know, little love notes from Jenna. I love them. That's Jesus. He's the adoration that my son has of his father, who cries when I have to go to the gym and clings to my leg, and so I end up taking him because I don't want to miss those minutes with him. Okay? He is the joy that's overcome my wife for the last 4 years as her prayers have been answered. And he's also the teacher and comforter when life is discouraging, like going 2-24 during a basketball season. And it's okay that it was brutal, because he is the comforter and he's the encourager when tough seasons come your way, whether it's basketball, the economy, whether you can't get a job right out of college, whether middle school or high school is a little rough sometimes. He's the encourager. That's Jesus. And I hope that this has touched you a little bit as I shared my story in around one of the great parables in the Bible. So I pray and I bless that it touched you in some way, and I pray that God is pleased by, you know, his words that were shared here today. Thank you so much for having me.